Okay, we're having a quick class on Parsha. This week's Parsha is Parshat Lech Lecha. We are introduced to the great giant of Jewish history, Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu. Every year I say the same line. Pay attention as you read the Parsha, not only to what's said, but to what is not said. One of the greatest messages to my mind of these Parshiyot is the thundering silence. How many times Avraham Avinu has to deal with life's challenges? He's a prophet. Hashem talks to him, except for when Hashem doesn't. And then Avraham has to deal with challenges in life where Hashem doesn't explain to him how this makes sense or why this is happening. And that's one of the great challenges in life, where we make the right decision and we do the right thing and the outcome is very, very difficult. So our parsha begins out of order. Our tradition is that the end of the parsha happened first. That Avraham Avinu first migrated to Israel and had the prophetic vision of Berit ben Abitarim, that his descendants would be enslaved in a foreign land, the fourth generation would return and have the land of Israel. And after Avraham had that great vision, he went back to Haran, and then our parsha begins. So the vision that's recorded at the end of the parsha, according to our tradition, happened earlier. Being as we're condensing an hour and a half class to 20 minutes, I don't think we can take questions tonight. Yeah, I don't think we can do that either. Well, he was waiting first. I'm saying, let's... So Hashem tells Avraham at the beginning of our parsha, go for your sake. Very often in life we think we're doing Hashem a favor when we do mitzvot. Hashem says, go for you. And that Hashem says, when you travel to the land of Israel, you will become a great nation, you will be wealthy, you will be famous, things will go well for you. Now, the stories we read about the patriarchs, we have a rule, it says in Medrash, Naaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. What does that mean? Oh, what happened to our forefathers is a siman. We'll translate that as a sign, symbol of what would happen to their descendants. So on one level, when we read the story of Avraham Avinu, we're supposed to get strength from it. Avraham Avinu is our father, right? Avinu, Avraham, our father. Hashem tells Avraham, leave your land, the place you were born, your father's house. You won't inherit your father. You will not have anything to do with that family anymore. And many people sitting around this table have done this journey, where you have to leave everything you know, come to a foreign land, you don't speak the language, you don't have the skills, you were comfortable, you had contacts in the country you left. And Avraham Avinu is told to do that. And there, you will be blessed, Hashem says. You think you're all alone, you're not. I am with you. So someone once said to me, I'm lonely. So I said, there are two answers. One is you need to find friends. And two is you need to find God. Both are important. A person needs friends. A person also needs a relationship with his Creator. Friends are also very important. Avram goes and he takes along his nephew. Avram married his niece, right? His brother Haran, we know the story, right? Nimrod challenged them. And then Nimrod said, do you believe in God or will you accept my idols? And Avram said, only God. And Nimrod said, I'm throwing you into the furnace. And then Nimrod turned to Avram's younger brother Haran and he said, Hashem or me and my idols? And Haran said, get back to me after Avram. And then they threw Avram into the furnace and he came out alive. So Haran said, I'm with him. So they said, let's see. They threw him into the furnace and he burnt. He was burnt alive. Because Hashem doesn't work that way. You have to put your all in. You can't say, I'm waiting to see. Haran said, I want to see what happens with Avram. Then I'll tell you where I am. So after Avram walked out alive, Haran said, I'm with him. They threw him in and he burnt. So Avram adopted Haran's children. He married Haran's daughter, Sarah. And he took in Haran's son, Lot. And Lot goes along with Avram. Avram is 75 years old. He's no youngster anymore. And, yes, Vinny's going to have my head.
I have a question about the age thing, because he became like 180.
It's so not fair.
So we only be like 50. compared to...
It says Avram took the souls that they made in Haran. We got 20 minutes. Our sages say, there's a beautiful line in the Medrash here. The Medrash says, put together the whole world and let them work on creating one mosquito. And they won't be able to. You can't... It says the souls that they made in Haran, we can't create anything. We could clone, we could copy, we could do in vitro fertilization, but to create something, we can't create anything. So what does it mean Avram took the people they created in Haran? Chazal tell us, you educate someone, you created them. You teach a person about Judaism, you teach them about monotheism. That's what it means. What does it mean that they created in Haran? So Chazal teaches us a rule. Avraham mekarevet ha-anashim, Sarah mekarevet et ha-nashim. Abraham would teach the men, Sarah would teach the women. My wife was a teacher when we first got married. She was a teacher in a school where, with underprivileged children. So there was a 13-year-old who came from a very violent home. And my wife asked me if we could start inviting him to our house. Maybe we could have him over for Shabbos and help him and be his adoptive family. I said to my wife, if we want to be an adoptive family, so let's find kids to be an adoptive family too. But let's take that 13-year-old and find him a different family. What was the logic? I said, you're 18, he's 13. What's going to be in 5 years? He's going to be 18, you're going to be 23. The age difference, you know, right now he's a little kid, but that's going to change very quickly. He needs to find a family where the distance between the mother and him is a much bigger age gap. The 5-year age gap isn't the big age gap when he's 13 and you're 18. In a matter of no time, he's going to be very close to your age. You're his teacher, and then you'll become his girlfriend. That's not the kiruv Chazal wanted us to do. Chazal said, women help women come close to Hashem. Men help men come close to Hashem. And as nice as I'm going to try to be to him, bottom line, you're with him every day. You're his teacher. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to work. So let's find him another family where it makes sense. And that's what we worked on. And we'll take other children. And that's what we did. There were other children that ended up being, we were like their adoptive homes. That's the rule we learn here. They worked. The pasuk describes Avram and Sarah worked. Sarah worked with the women. Avram worked with the men. And this is important. Very often guys come out of Machon Meir and they're very excited to teach the world about Judaism. That's great. Channel it in a modest way. Avram comes into Israel, but Hashem didn't tell him where he's going. That's part of the challenge in life, and that's perhaps a metaphor for all of life. You don't always know where you're going. That's the famous story, right, of Nachman of Breslov. There's a famous story of the Chassid that a Roman soldier met him and asked him, where you're going? And he said, I don't know. He said, you were rushing somewhere. He says, I don't know. He said, you're going to jail. He puts him in jail. He takes him out of jail a day later and says, now do you want to answer me, where were you going? He says, yeah, I was going to jail. I didn't know where I was going. We don't know where we're going. We know where we want to be going. You asked me, where am I going? I said, I don't know. That's the truth. Do I know where I want to go? I don't know where I want to go. I don't know where I'm going. You see? So that's a rule in life. Avram is traveling and Hashem doesn't yet tell him where he's going. And in much of life, there's a saying in Yiddish that says, man thinks he's running towards something and he's really running away from something. Man thinks he's running away from something and he's really running towards something. Very often in life, the calamities that we have that are life-altering are really a driving force that push us towards what our goal should be. We feel like I have to avoid the problem here. You're not only avoiding the problem there. There's a new opening being set before you. Now, it's a question of how you approach it. I have a friend who had to leave the country he had everything in. Everything he had fell apart. He had to leave. Financial ruin. And he wasn't willing to come to terms with the idea that making aliyah is a positive thing. He said, no, I had to leave what was bad there. And I kept telling him, that's true, but you've also come to something good here. look at the positive you've come to, not only the negative you've left. He was never willing to make that switch until today. He's a person that's sunk in depression. He wouldn't look at it differently. In life, we say both aspects happen. When you leave something, you're also going towards something else. You can't only look at what I left. You also have to look at where I'm going. Avram is told, go, and I'm not telling you where. Avram travels, and then Hashem appears and says, your children will have this land. Hashem doesn't define to Avram, what does it mean, your children? Avram's not sure what Hashem means by that. Does Hashem mean his relatives, his broader family? Is Lot considered his child, as we find happens often in Tanakh, that when a person adopts a child into their home, so God considers it as though that's his child? Does Hashem mean his faithful servant, Eliezer, who's come with him this whole way, and he's the future of his family? Avram doesn't know. So Avram accepts it, he offers a sacrifice, and he moves on. And for the first time in world history, there's a famine in Israel. That's like a guy who, the prophet comes to him and says, invest in Apple. And he looks at the ratings of Apple, I don't know, but, and he sees that for the last 3 centuries, Apple has only been going up. So he invests in Apple, and the next day the stock crashes, and it keeps crashing, and it breaks every support, and he looks at the prophet, and what's he supposed to say? Hashem told him everything will go well. Hashem says, go to Israel, go, I will show you where to go, you will have wealth, you will be blessed. He comes to Israel, and for the first time in world history, there's a famine. There's nothing to eat, there's nothing to drink, there's no rain, and he's losing his wealth. So Avram understands he's not supposed to stick around when he has no money to buy food. So he travels to a land that has food without rain. Egypt. Egypt has the Nile. So he travels southward. He's approaching Egypt and he turns to Sarah and he says, okay, your children will come home with the following story. Avram was super modest. He was a man who loved his wife and he wasn't into looks. And as they were traveling, he suddenly looked at the water in the stream, and he saw a beautiful woman in the stream in the water. And then he thought for a second, and then he looked up, and he realized it was a reflection of his wife. They'd been married for decades, and he never stopped to look at her beauty, because that's not what their relationship was all about. But when he looked at the water, and he thought, well, that's weird, what's that beautiful woman doing in the water? And then he realized, wow, that's my wife, I've been married to all these years. He turns to Sarah, and he says, boy, are you beautiful. This is dangerous. If we go into Egypt with such beauty, who knows what's going to happen. I need you to do me a favor, tell them you're my sister. And then Avram makes a deal with her, and he hides her in a box. And as they enter the customs agents, they start charging Avram customs for everything he brings in. And they tell him what's in the box. And he says, I'll pay you custom for it. They say, but maybe you have money in the box. He says, I'll pay customs as though I have money. They say, but maybe you have gold in the box. He says, I'll pay customs as though it's gold. And they say, maybe you have rubies in the box. And he says, I'll pay custom for rubies. And they say, no. Must be you have something more precious than all that. Open the box. We have to see what's inside the box. And they force him to open the box. And when they see Sarah, so they all say, wow. So one guy says, she's for me. And the next guy says, she's for me. And the next guy says, you guys have no right to touch this lady. She's fit for a king. And they send word to Pharaoh, a woman has just entered Egypt who's fit for a king. Okay, so that's the story they tell our children in Gan. Avram is so modest, he never looks at his wife. That's not what interests him, her beauty. And here, because of what happened at the stream, he notices her beauty. There is such a medrash. There is such a medrash. Okay, that's
how
one.
How would he have paid for the customs?
He had loans. He had taken loans. He owed a lot of people money. He was in debt, but he had money. Another pshat is that he tells Sarah, I always knew you were beautiful, but now it's a danger that you're beautiful. We're traveling into Egypt. The people of Egypt are all black. You're white. You're going to stand out among them. Everyone's going to notice you. It's a danger. So he says, they will easily kill me and take you. What we have to do is you'll say you're my sister, and that way they won't kill me. And not only that, we'll benefit. They'll give me gifts. They'll all want to be nice to me because you're my sister. But what happens is the other way. Pharaoh doesn't even talk to her. Pharaoh just summons her and has her abducted. Now that's not ethical. Talk to the woman, but he treats her like a piece of property. So she's brought into her home. Chazal say that Pharaoh wasn't dead and she was brought into the room and an angel walked in. Again, the version your children will tell you was that Pharaoh wanted to make advances at her, and Sarah said to the angel, hit him. And the angel went and hit him. And suddenly Pharaoh gets hit over the head and he's thrown back across the room. He says, what just happened? He tries to make another advance again. Sarah says, hit him. And he gets hit again. And time after again until Pharaoh's all beaten up. And he says, okay, I give up. Obviously, there's something wrong here. I'm not supposed to marry you. Go back. I understand you're a married woman. Chazal tell us that midrash, but Chazal tell us a few other midrashim. Number one, one interpretation is says she was brought to Pharaoh's house. So according to that interpretation, before Pharaoh even met her, he was plagued, he was punished, he couldn't go to the bathroom, his whole family was wounded, and he right away summons Avram and says, take her back, you didn't tell me she was your wife, I want to have nothing to do with this. Second interpretation, the Medrash says, is that Pharaoh brought her into the bedroom and she was lying on the bed and he was all over her. And he did everything but be intimate with her. That he wasn't able to do. Hashem, when Hashem plagued Pharaoh in his house, so they couldn't, none of the apertures would open. They couldn't go to the bathroom, they couldn't procreate, they couldn't, everything went closed. And the Medrash says, Sarah was lying there crying. And she says, Ribon Shalom, you promised Avram everything would be okay for him. You didn't tell me anything. Here I am suffering, and he's at home. He's got all the gifts from Pharaoh. Ribon Shalom, I believed in Avram, and I believed in you. Get me out of here. Save me. So that's a medrash we don't tell the children, right? That Pharaoh was all over her, and she was crying, and she said to their Ribon Shalom, I counted on you. One of the important things to remember, again, we don't tell the kids this, but it is important to remember. We read the story, and we read 10 verses, and Sarah's back home, and Avram and Sarah are back together again. But if we can put ourselves in Avram and Sarah's shoes, no one told them how it would play itself out. When Avram sees his wife being taken by the Egyptian forces to Paro's home, from Avram's perspective, it's over. He no one's telling him he'll ever see Sarah again. And again, the thundering silence. Hashem doesn't come in and say, Avram, don't worry, in a day you'll have her back. The challenge of life is that Hashem doesn't tell us when the challenges will be over. Yeah, according to Chazal, the next day she was back home. But again, Avram didn't know that. And Sarah didn't know that. Chazal say Pharaoh was so madly in love with her, he had his men create a doll that looked just like her, and he would sleep with that doll. He would be intimate with that doll over and over again, imagining it was Sarah. That's a medrash in Chazal. So
why was he so eager to bring her back?
He saw that he and his whole family and everyone was suffering greatly, and he understood that was all because he had taken her. So Pharaoh sends his men and he has a royal escort take them out of the country. Now Avram has all the gifts and he has all the wealth, and now he has all the gold and silver and cattle that Pharaoh's given him.
Why did he receive all those gifts?
Because Pharaoh thought he was her brother. So Pharaoh says, you're my family now. I took her, I'm going to take her as a wife.
He didn't take them back though when he gave Sarah?
No, he didn't take any of the gifts back.
Pharaoh in essence feared him.
Certainly seems that way. Avram is traveling with a lot of wealth, and Lot, who has come along with Avram, also has a lot of wealth. And now there's a fight between Avram and Lot. What's going on here? So our sages say that Lot's shepherds would let their animals graze and destroy people's property. And Avram's shepherds would always stand out. People would see Avram's camels, Avram's shepherds. They always had a muzzle. Now, a muzzle does two things. You guys ever go and show its teeth? I used to have a path that I'd walk every day, and there were a lot of people that would let there. So I decided one day that what I'm going to do is buy myself this big samurai sword. And when the dogs would approach me barking, I'd just pull it out and stand there facing the dogs. Now, why? I didn't do it in the end, but that's what I wanted to do. Why? Because I didn't do this, but that's what I wanted to do. Because all the owners always tell you, don't worry, it doesn't bite. So I wanted to stand there with my samurai sword and say, it don't. You know, how calm would you be if you saw your dog next to a samurai sword, right? You wouldn't be calm, right? I'm supposed to be calm and believe you, the dog doesn't bite. So Chazal say we have a responsibility with our pets. They have to have a muzzle and get scared. It's not enough that I know he won't hurt anyone. People have to be calm around my pets. I'm just holding the sword. Don't worry, right? You wouldn't be calm around that. I didn't do it. I'm just saying, I always thought that would be the fitting response. I won't worry, you won't worry. Abram's cat says muzzles. People know that wherever they're traveling, they're not eating from their property. And Avram is ensuring that all other people's property. Lot's shepherds were always saying, God promised Avram that his children are having this land, and he has no children. Obviously, it means Lot. So in the name of God, they're stealing. That's a very common thing. People will do things that are completely inappropriate, and they'll say, it's a mitzvah. I believe in God. It's okay. So Avram tells Lot, you have a choice. You can go wherever you go. I won't be too far away. I will be with you. And Lot makes a critical error. Lot does not look at people. Lot looks at property. Again, what's Lot's critical error? He does not look at people. The people of Sodom are the most decrepit people on the planet. They are evil. They are immoral. But Lot looks at the property, and there is so much wealth. It's the best place to invest. So Lot settles over there. He has the most horrible neighbor. He ends up with the most horrible wife. He has terrible things in his home. But no. He has a good property. Avram is not far from him. He promises him, I won't be far away. Yes. I guess something went on from Lot to his daughters. After Lot leaves, so there are two opinions in Chazal as to how Hashem viewed it. One opinion says, Hashem said, so long as he was around, I didn't want to talk to you. Now that he's gone, we can talk. So Hashem gives him prophecy. The other opinion says, yes, but when Hashem appears with the name of mercy, with the Vav. Vashem. With the Vav connotes that there was exacting justice in heaven against Avram. And so the other opinion says that when Lot left, Hashem said to Avram, you take in strangers, you take in pagans, you're nice to everyone on the planet, and you can't get along with your own nephew? You had to break up with him? So even though Avram was legitimate in the argument with Lot, on the other hand, on one level, Chazal say in heaven, Hashem had a point where Hashem was saying Avram should have worked it out differently. Two opinions in Chazal. We don't have time. At this time, the four kings, one of which is Nimrod, who has the code name Amraphel, which stands for the one who said to have Abraham thrown into the furnace, go to war. Why are they going to war? So the pasuk says there was a rebellion against their rule. Chazal say they went to war because they heard that Lot looked just like Avram. And two versions in the Medrash. One version in the Medrash says, they said, let's take down all of Avram's friends, and then we'll go after Avram. Lot is his relative, let's take him down. After we take down Lot and the area he's living, we'll go after Avram. The second opinion says, they knew they couldn't take down Avram. Their thought was, we'll go around parading Lot. Lot looks similar enough to Avram that we will be able to say we captured Avram. Remember, Nimrod is the one trying to promote paganism. His arch enemy is Avram Avinu. We said they will die on the same day. Throughout their lives, Avram and Nimrod are having this sometimes verbal, sometimes active, sometimes silent battle. And so now Nimrod figures, when I capture Lot, I will be able to tell the world that I captured Avram. And I will be able to continue promoting my paganism. So they go and capture the area of Sodom. They capture five kings, including the giants that came to help them. And after they're victorious, Avram gets word that his nephew was captured. Chazal say, who came to give him word that his nephew was captured? That was Og. Og, why did he tell Avram? He figured, let Avram die in battle, and then I'll marry his beautiful wife, Sarah. So Avram goes to war. And here Nachmanides says we see Avram's great wealth, because on a second's notice, he has 318 knights ready to go to war. He has 318 men that on 1 second's notice are ready to go with him to battle. And that's the greatest kings didn't have that many knights ready on a second notice. So Avram goes to war. And part of what he does, it's the night of Pesach when he goes to war, he splits his men into two camps. So that when he attacks them on two sides. And this is an old Jewish tactic that when we go to war, we use the coverage of night so that the enemy doesn't know how many people are attacking them. And this is where we will pick up Be'ezrat Hashem on Thursday night with the tactics Avram Avinu did and the miracles and how Avram succeeded in that war. We are almost up to Chamishi, to be continued Thursday night.